So turn in your Bibles to John chapter 8. We are going to be finishing our look at John 8. I feel like we've been in this chapter for a very long time. I mean, it's 59 verses. I guess that's one thing, but it just seems like we've been looking at this chapter for a while, and I know we had some breaks along the way. Over the last month or so, I've been watching a series on the History Channel. It's called World War II with Tom Hanks. How many of you have seen some of it? Okay, got a few hands up there. I've watched many World War II documentaries. You can ask Angela, right? Yeah. Dustin and I were talking about this a few months ago. There's something about when you reach the age that we're at that you kind of start watching documentaries on wars that you weren't around to see. So, I've been watching this, and because I've seen other ones, there's not a lot of whole new information. But there have been a few things in some of the episodes that I think connects with my message this morning. In one of the episodes, they highlight the invasion of the Allies onto the boot of Italy. And so in 1943, the Allies had landed in North Africa, had pushed Rommel's forces of the Axis group through North Africa, and they pushed him off of the continent, and then they staged to cross the Mediterranean Sea to push through southern Italy to combat the Axis forces. When they arrived on Sicily, their movement was rather quick. They had overwhelmed the Axis, and then they made their way across a little strip of water into southern Italy. They thought that they would have a pretty quick move up Italy into Rome, and especially because Rome was in crisis. Italy was in crisis at this point in the war. But the battle raged on for months and months and months, and it was really quite a while later when they finally entered Rome itself. One of the things that created great trouble for the Allies was that they underestimated the topography of Italy. And if you followed World War II stuff, you know there was a great battle called Monte Cassino. And it was this fortress that was up on top of a hill. Well, it was really a monastery that became a fortress. And this battle waged on because the Germans had the high ground, and the Allies just could not penetrate through. So the Allies had underestimated the terrain they would face, and it created a problem. All the while this was going on, the Allies were also planning a North European invasion from England, and they named it Operation Overlord. Operation Overlord became the code name of the Battle of Normandy in North France that was launched on June 6, 1944. This battle was in planning stages for over a year because the Allies were learning from what they experienced in North Africa, in Sicily, and in Italy, and they took a lot of time studying the land. They studied their enemy. They were trying to get a feel the best way they could land in North Europe to engage Nazi Germany to overthrow their powers and ultimately crush their desire to rule that part of the world. And the Allies ended up winning over a year later. But it began with that first step in Normandy as they gathered intelligence, as they studied their enemy, as they looked at the ground that they were going to be entering on. Now, you're not here for a history lesson. But why did that thought come to mind when I was thinking about John 8? Because in a spiritual sense, I think we are often guilty of not being prepared for the spiritual battles that we face. Like, we go through life and we come across even mild irritations sometimes, and we throw up the white flag and we surrender. And we totally get caught off guard. And we forget. And please hear me say this. We are not in peacetime right now. We're in wartime. We are in a spiritual war. And we have an enemy. And the enemy is seeking to destroy us. I saw a reel on Instagram this week, you know, 30-second video. A lady saying boastfully, when I was a Christian, all I thought about was all these battles I had to face, all these strongholds that were in my life. And now that I am an atheist, I have no more battles. And then someone quickly responded as they kind of like captured that. And they said, well, that's obvious. The enemy won in your life. He doesn't need to fight against you anymore because you gave into it. But for us as Christians, we're at battle. And we forget that we're not battling people on the earth. We're not battling the neighbor that annoys us when he says things about the Lord that frustrate us. We're not battling against government decisions that undermine really important things as it concerns the sanctity of life. We're not battling those things. And yet we spend so much time and energy focusing on what we see with our eyes in this battle. We engage the wrong enemy because we're fighting a battle not against a person. And as we fight, we forget the provision that we have been given to fight, because God says we're not to fight with our own strength. And sadly, we become distracted in these battles because they do seem overwhelming at times. And we move on. And we forget that we're living in foreign territory right now. We face a cunning and resourceful enemy. And that's really what's been happening in John chapter 8. And, you know, a lot of what we're reading about today is the summary of a long, not even discussion, but really Jesus on the offensive with the religious leaders, of a back and forth between him and the Pharisees of the Jews. All throughout John 8, we've seen facing increasing criticism and hostility of the religious leaders with Jesus. We're 6 months away from the cross. Everything is ramping up in the Lord's ministry on earth. And even in John 8, as his critics are attacking him and seeking to destroy him, because we've read throughout John 8 and John 7, even in John 6, the religious leaders had sought ways to destroy, to kill, to remove Jesus from his ministry, that Jesus stays faithful to the task for which he came. And even in John 8, against religious hostility, Jesus, in going on the offensive, is acting mercifully with those that he is talking to. That he offers hope in their darkness. These religious leaders become increasingly hostile. At least 10 times in John 8, the religious leaders contend with the Lord over his teaching. Yet through it all, Jesus doesn't back down. He doesn't divert from his mission. He understands he's in a battle, and he understands that he is fighting for what is truly at stake, the eternal destiny of the people that he is contending with. He's not fighting for himself alone. It's not about just him and you know, his name is being torn down and he's like, oh man, they're really going to destroy who I am and my credibility. Jesus understands, I stand credible no matter what attacks are given. Jesus contends for the truth of who he is and for the mission that he was sent, because he understands there's a cross that is set before him. And he counted the cost of the lives that were being blinded by the true enemy. And who's the true enemy in John 8? Their father, the devil, who is a liar and a murderer. He understands the cost of the lives of the people that he is talking to. And even in this contention, he offers mercy. So what I want to do this morning is I want to look at this text and we're going to draw some principles from it as Jesus is engaging these unbelievers. And I want us to consider another passage that is written in the New Testament to help us prepare for the spiritual battles. So we're going to draw some principles from what Jesus says, and then we're going to look at something else that allows us to kind of put that together for our own lives. So in John 8, I'm going to be reading in verses 48 through 59. We read these words. The Jews answered and said to him, "Do we not say rightly that you are a Samaritan and have a demon?" Jesus answered, "I do not have a demon, but I honor my Father, and you dishonor me. But I do not seek my glory. There is one who seeks and judges. Truly, truly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death." The Jews said to him, "Now we know that you have a demon. Abraham died, and the prophets also. And you say, if anyone keeps my word, he will never taste of death. Surely you are not greater than our father Abraham, who died. The prophets died too. Whom do you make yourself out to be?" Jesus answered, "If I glorify myself, my glory is nothing. It is my Father who glorifies me, of whom you say, 'He is our God.' And you have not come to know him, but I know him. And if I say that I do not know him, I will be a liar like you. But I do know him and keep his word. Your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, and he saw it and was glad." So the Jews said to him, "You are not yet 50 years old, and have you seen Abraham?" Jesus said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was born, I am." Therefore, they picked up stones to throw at him. But Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple. So one of the things to notice here in John 8 is that, yes, in the main sense, Jesus is contending with the religious leaders who are named earlier on in this chapter as the Pharisees, the scribes, in John 8, verse 3, and then following, in verse 13, the Pharisees said to Jesus, "You're testifying about yourself. Your testimony is not true." But what's interesting is we read in this passage that as Jesus was contending against the Pharisees, that many came to believe in him. And then he says, "Okay, do you really want to know what belief means? Do you want to know what it means to be a follower? Keep my word." And then he keeps having this conversation. And you get the sense that some of the Jews that initiated belief and saying, "Yeah, we think what he's saying is true," by the end of this conversation, they're joining the religious leaders, because the lens kind of pulls out. And we begin to see that when we read in verse 48, the Jews answered, it's not just the religious leaders, but there's even some Jews there during this time at the Feast of Tabernacles, that they're swayed in their belief because Jesus is saying some very hard things. But I want you to notice throughout this passage in John 8, Jesus remained faithful to the mission for which he was sent. He contended for the truth with these confused and hard-hearted Jews. And you're going to meet people in your life, right, that are hard-hearted towards the Lord. Does that mean that when they are antagonized towards the truth and they begin sharing abuse about the Lord, or they begin fighting with us, that we say, okay, I guess you're not going to listen. I'm going to take my ball and go home. No. Jesus remained faithful. He contended for the truth. A lot of what we see here is found throughout John 8, and Jesus stays on point. He doesn't become distracted by the attacks of the enemy. Because the enemy, the father, their devil, says, hey, just keep contending with them. Keep fighting. And maybe you'll wear them down. Maybe you'll get them to the point where they give up and move on. They tried it with Jesus, and Jesus said, no, I'm going to stay on point here. I'm going to tell you why I came. I came because the Father sent me. And everything that I do is because the Father told me to do it. And everything that I say are things that I've seen with the Father before I ever stepped on earth. See, what a person thinks about Jesus is of most importance. Many people thought he was a wonderful teacher, a moral and ethical example, that he sought to minister to lowly and hurting people, to have compassion. And those are all good and wonderful things that our Lord did. We would say Jesus was one of the most, if not the most, virtuous person that has ever walked this world. And you can agree with all of those things. But if you miss the point of who he is, as he expressed oneness with the Father, that he is God himself, you will be separated from him forever. So there will be people that will distract you and say, yeah, you know, I agree that Jesus did a lot of good things, that he was a miracle worker, that, boy, he could teach the Bible. But when you talk to them about Jesus being God himself, they'll say to you, nah, that can't be true. So you can agree on a lot of little things or a lot of secondary things, but if you don't agree on who Jesus is and his nature and character, that is a lost person that you're talking to,